Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California, and also New York, which is where our guest is today. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If this is your first time tuning in, our show is going to help you to question your career reality. And this show is for you if you are considering a career in the entertainment industry. Now, our guest on the show provides you with tips, advice, and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. And our guests work in various professions of entertainment, and they're at different stages of their career. So that means that we will definitely have someone on the show who will be able to help you with your show business career questions. If you want to check out all of our past guests, read their bios, and listen to their interviews instantly, and you can also download any of our past shows, you want to go to the LA Talk Radio website. That is latalkradio.com. And you click on the link at the top of the website. The links will say Channel 1. Then you click on the shows link, and then you look for our show, which is Question Reality, of course, and click that link. And that takes you directly to our archive page. And that is where you can view a list of our past guests. We've been on the air since 2008, and we have covered just about every type of profession. We do producers, directors, actors, music, musicians, production, behind the scenes people like production assistants, script supervisors, set designers, stuntmen. We do celebrity reality stars. We do Emmy winners. We do Tony winners. You name it. We have them on the show. So go to that archive website on latalkradio.com. And look for our shows. And look, I put titles on there of who they are so you can very easily access the type of show that you want. So go and check that out. That link will take you directly to the archive page. And you can also download our free app for your Android or iPhone and listen to any of the other exciting and informative shows. LA Talk Radio has a ton of shows. They cover a whole spectrum of topics. You want to learn how to play the guitar. You want to learn how to play an instrument. You want some sex advice. Are you having problems in the old sleeper? Well, there's a person on there that can help you with that. They got political shows. They've got everything. So check out the shows at latalkradio.com and download the app from the homepage on the latalkradio.com website. And that's located towards the bottom of the page. So just scroll down and you will find it, and I guarantee you, you will love the shows on LA Talk Radio. It's not just mine that's super fantabulous. Lots of other shows. Check them out. Now, our shows are also available for download on iTunes under the podcast section, and we're also on Stitcher.com. So just go to their websites and type Question Reality Radio in the search box, and you can also pull us up there. And lastly, if you want to find out about our future guests, you have to go to a whole different website. It's a whole different one. It's the official Question Reality website, and that address is questionrealityradioshow.com. questionrealityradioshow.com, and then you just want to look for the 2015 schedule, and that'll tell you who's coming on, all the exciting people that have lots of sage advice for you. But let's get to the hot little property we got on the show today. Fantastic guest. I was so excited when my lovely little oodle of noodles, Stephen Levine, told me she was available to come on the show. Very exciting lady. Her name is Pat Patterson. PP. Miss PP herself. PP. PP. Oh, no, that couldn't be. All right. P is P. Let's just keep it up. Pat Patterson. She is an actress and a producer, among many other things. I want you to go to her website right now. Pate Productions. Love this name. Pate. Pate Productions. P-A-T-E. P-R-O-D-U-C-T-I-O-N-S. She also has a website, patpatterson.me. She's on Twitter at PPP Dreams and Facebook as Pate Productions. So Pat is all over. She's got property and real estate all over the internet. So go and check her out. But just a little bit about her. Again, she's an award-winning producer since 1992. She has been rocking and rolling. Let me tell you, this woman is up and at 'em. As an actress, Pat just filmed the season opening of the NBC hit drama The Blacklist, starring James Spader. You know, that's huge. Everybody loves this show. I had like a super mega crush on James Spader back in the 80s. I think he was in Mannequin. And yet, oh, and I loved him on, I think Boston Legal. Was it Boston Legal? Oh, God, with Captain Kirk. Boston Legal. Yeah, I loved him on that. But I have yet to check out The Blacklist, but I will. I will. I'm going to do it. Now, Pat also is an award-winning producer. In 1992, along with two Broadway veterans, she formed Fleetwood Stage. It's an equity regional theater in Westchester County, New York, and Fleetwood Stage has had 11 season run, producing 4 main stage productions per year, and that's also along with children theater, and they have a Shakespeare in the Park overlooking Long Island Sound, of course. And now she's turned her skills and her passion for the art of producing to this really cute production company name, which I have to find out. I mean, it kind of seems like I know how she came up with it, but we want to find out for sure. It's called Pate Productions Limited. And Pat, as a member of the board of T. Schreiber Studios, she recently helped in the creation of the studio's first year-long conservatory, which is a comprehensive professional training program designed to prepare dedicated actors for thriving careers in theater, film, and television. She has also served on the board of the Blank Theater, which is Hollywood's resident theater. So, my God, without further ado, live from the Big Apple, here with us today is Pat Patterson. Welcome, Pat Patterson, PP.
Hello. Girl, that was awesome. I'm going to have you walk in front of me everywhere I go.
Woo! I'm out of breath. I need a cocktail and a love injection. I'm telling you. Woo! I think I'm seeing a little wings for the cocktail.
Oh my God, that was awesome.
Well,
you are awesome.
You have Pate Productions Limited, and from what I understand, you guys came into existence. Very interesting. As a result of a short story written by a 15-year-old. Why don't you tell us about that? I mean, I've never heard anyone say, oh, I started my production company because of a short story written by a 15-year-old. How did it happen, Pat?
Well, I came back into acting. I mean, I came to New York to study acting in 1977. And yes, I am that old. And you know, had a very traditional training, academy, HP, etc., and then walked away and produced. I produced at Fleetwood Stage. I produced opera in the Midwest. And then I raised my family and said, but I want to be an actor. I came to New York to be an actor. And so I came back, but I knew coming back that I was going to have to produce because, there's, you know, it's a food chain and you want to even out the curve. You don't want to be... And so my daughter is a 15-year-old. She's now... It's 10 years. She's... She wrote a short story for a contest at school, and it was brilliant. And she didn't win. And she was so angry, she threw the short story in the drawer. And I said, would you mind if I sort of just keep this? You know? And it was a beautiful, we made it into a 10-minute film. I starred in it. And it is now used by hospice of Chesapeake Bay Area for part of their outreach training, because it deals with older couple, suicide, and euthanasia.
Wow.
And you know, this little 50, we're like, how did you come up with this concept? It made us a little nervous, I have to tell you.
Yeah,
you know?
To be so young. I mean, a 15-year-old writing this stuff. What'd she say?
She said she had heard on the news that somebody killed their husband for the insurance money. And she said, how could that be a good thing? I mean, not really a good thing, but how could it not be such a bleh? And so she came up with that the husband was sick and the wife euthanized, you know, they make this agreement, but you think that she's dreaming about this younger man and that she killed him to be with her younger man. And you go through your story, and at the end, she commits suicide to be with her John, her young John, and you see the picture of them when they were young, and she commits suicide to be with him.
Wow.
And the insurance money was so that their son had something, because they had wasted or used all their assets with his illness. So the insurance money was for her son. So I said, I have to make this film. It'll be a great vehicle for me, you know. And I knew I was going to produce. So let's start with this. Let's do the film festival circuit. Let's walk the walk and talk the talk. You know, because we knew there was a feature coming down the road, and that's what we did. We spent a year on the road with it, learned a lot. You know, you go to film festivals, you have to learn to negotiate it, navigate it, so that you know what the heck you're doing. You're not like a deer in a headlight. So that's how that came to be. And
Pat
K Productions was just out, you know, Pat Patterson, duh, you figured it out. PP, I have no monograms, there's not a darn monogram on anything I own. But I like the initials. It's actually my name. You know, my parents had a warped sense of humor. Pate Productions, I'm like, I love pate. I'm like in search of the perfect pate and the perfect bourgeois, which is why I no longer live in California. You banned it, so I had to leave town.
They don't know what pate is out here. What the hell's pate? They think it's their damn hairdresser. I'm going to see pate today to get my roots done. That's what they think pate is out here. You know it's true now, Pat.
I know. I lived out there for 2.5 years. I got it. I got the whole lay of the land. It's all good. So it was just like natural. I wanted it to be PP. I love pate. And I was like, go for it. What the heck?
It works.
Well,
now we know that. Well, now we know the mystery. It's been solved right here on Question Reality Radio Show. Now, let me ask you, as a child, Pat, we're going to back it on up. We're going to back it up to the 60s, or we'll just say
60s. Yeah, 60s, yeah. Right. You got that right.
As a child, what was your entree, let's say, into the entree into the world of entertainment and acting?
Not at all. I never acted in a play. I never was in a school play or a religious play. I was in a flower. I was nothing. I never acted. I saw Cheetah Rivera, who I came to know, do Sweet Charity in the theater in the Round. I grew up outside Philadelphia in a theater of the Round there, and that was the only play I'd ever seen in my life when I was 16. But I somehow knew I wanted to be an actor. Now, I didn't tell anyone because it's funny, last week, this woman named Jean Nidage, who created Weight Watchers, died. And I posted on Facebook because I said, in 1968, weighing in at 240 pounds, I took the bus to my first Weight Watchers meeting. And this woman has died, and I just got to thank her because she'd allowed me. I was scared to tell her I was fat, I was ugly, and it was the 60s, and that was not acceptable. And telling somebody I wanted to be an actor in my family, oh my God, they wouldn't even know what I was talking about. My brother and I were the first to go to college. So I was 24 years old, married, living in Hartford, Connecticut. And my husband said, he was doing his residency at St. Francis. He said, what do you want to do? And I went, give me a week to work up the nerve to tell you. And a week later, I said, I've always wanted to be an actor. And he said, well, let's move to New York because I want to be a psychiatrist. And that's like going to Mecca.
Oh, my gosh. What a supportive man he was. I mean, you know, especially back in those days, usually, you know, they ruled the roost. What they said went. Yeah. So he was very, very progressive. Good for him. He was ahead of his time.
Here.
That'd
we
be
moved there and went to, you know, I went to the academy for 2 years and I studied with Uta Hagen. I did all that stuff, you know, but I needed to grow up still. And I walked away. I was so lucky. This is so funny. There was a, when you're at the academy, they would bring in guest directors to do the final season, you know, the final plays, to showcase your works and decide who's coming back. And there was, my director was a man named Doric Wilson, who was also a playwright. Now, he was a lovely man. He was into S&M back in the 70s. And first person I ever met, it was the disco days. We'd go discoing because I became a friend. And he had chains everywhere. And I was like, I've never danced with anyone that made this much noise.
He
wrote plays for women with my kind of voice, you know, strong women, even back then. And so here I am, I'm right out of school, and I'm doing Off-Broadway. He wrote like four plays that I did.
What?
So I got my equity card, Off-Broadway, yeah. And then I realized that I didn't understand the business. I had just fallen in. It's a, you know, what we do is a business. This is a hard business. And I just walked away to grow up and didn't, you know, and didn't come back until 8 years ago.
Well, seriously. Now you've been in the business of production since 1992.
Yeah.
So when you formed Fleetwood Stage in New Rochelle, New York, tell me a little bit how you came to form this company.
Actually, it was when I first moved to New York City. The guy that lived under me was on Search for Tomorrow and then Another World, and you know, we became friends. And then he moved, and he was part of St. Louis Rep back in the day, and, you know, it was a great rep theater. And he moved up to Westchester when I did. And he had this dream of creating a repertory company. And I was like, I'm all in. You know, yeah, let's do this. And we basically did this on my grandmother's dining room table, you know, with the mass mailings and the fundraisers. And God, until the table finally broke. I'm not even kidding you. But it was him and his friend Nelson, who is still a dear friend of mine. And, you know, they had been on Broadway. They had directed around the country. And I was just a little kid still. I mean, I was older, but I was like a little kid still learning everything. But I'm organized. I'm so organized. And so I could take over that part of it, you know, the general manager, or when we needed a stage manager, or when we didn't have enough money for an assistant stage manager, you know, I did all of that. My daughter, who was like two at the time we formed it, swears she learned to read because I picked her up from nursery school, throw her in the back of the theater for rehearsals, and she learned to read through scripts. And storytelling to her was live people doing it. She didn't have TV. She didn't have Sesame Street. She had professional actors on a stage.
Right.
She said, and if they yelled line, I swear I'd hear this little 4-year-old voice go, high energy, you know, giving them the line type of thing. So
I am with your daughter. My aunt was an actress on Broadway, and, you know, my dad died in Vietnam. So I had to be raised by six aunts and two uncles. And one of my aunts was a struggling actress on Broadway. So when it was her turn, she'd take me to the audition. She'd take me to the rehearsals. Even when she was doing the plays, I'd be backstage, you know, and they were serious. They are so, theater is so different on Broadway and off Broadway rather than, you know, out here in LA and other parts. They are serious. I mean, you got to be extremely professional. You got to be a triple threat. You got to sing, you got to act, you got to dance. And now you got to be able to do some parkour, for God's sakes, even on stage. I mean, they don't play around. They are business oriented. Now you've also been a member of the board of directors of New York's acclaimed T. Schreiber Studio. So for those who of our audience who aren't familiar with T. Schreiber Studio, tell us what it is and what was your involvement like on the board of this prestigious studio?
Well, Terry Schreiber is a man in probably in his 70s, and he's been acting teacher for, probably 40 years. And he created this studio, and when I came back, you know, you sort of want to brush up your skills. I mean, actors, we're always studying. We're taking voice, we're taking dance, we're taking Alexander, whatever it is. We're always striving to keep our instrument alive and focused. And so I went to his studio because I had heard about it. I interviewed with him, and I said, I like you. you know, I had interviewed with some other people whose names we won't mention who are big in my industry, in this industry of, you know, New York, but I was like, yeah, I don't like you. So I studied with him, and I studied with him his process for a couple of years, and he asked me to be on the board, and I said, Terry, I know I look wealthy, but I'm not really that wealthy. And he sort of laughed. And he said, no. And I said, you don't need me for artistic content because we have you. And he says, yeah, but you're organized. And our board has been a loosely group of 16 people who love each other, and we're not going forward. And if we're going to survive our 40th year, you know, this is mm-hmm. 6-7 years ago, then we need to organize. And that's really my producing partner, Summer Crockett Moore, a brilliant actress. She was president. I was secretary. And it was really bringing together people who could move it forward as a business. Again, I'm going back to this. As a business, it's what your whole show is about, Priscilla.
Right.
But this, you know, that what we're doing, there are ways you approach it. So it was, how do we create this board as a business? Now, Edward Norton studied with Terry. And just last Sunday, we had a gala, and he was honored along with Mary Louise Parker, you know. So he's had Peter Skarsgård. A lot of people have gone through Terry's programs. You know, and it's formal and it's not formal. I mean, he's a great classic lover. So my involvement was to organize it and fundraise. You know, I mean, yes, that's always part of a board member thing. And then to end the creation of the 1-year conservatory, which is now becoming a 2-year conservatory, because it, again, for them, it's a business and there's money to be had. We will pay for our children to go to acting school. And so we created it for that. And, you know, when I first started back with Terry, it was all theater. And then there was more, you know, there was a commercial class, and then there was a film class, because you want to talk about a triple threat, you got to be able to do all the mediums now.
Oh, yeah.
You want to survive.
Oh, yeah. So important. And a lot of actors, and I want you to stress this if you can, a lot of actors, I'm going to just tell you, they say, oh, why do we have to deal with the business? I just want to deal with the art. I just want to deal with the craft. I'm like, what is the title of the business you're in? It's show business. You've got to focus on the business. And now social media, it dominates. You have to know how to do Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram. You got to promote yourself, or, you know, they'll forget about you. So tell these actors, please, Pat, how important it is to promote yourself as a business, as an actress, as a producer.
I mean, like any business, you have to know what you're going for. You have to have those goals, you know, because otherwise you don't even know if you're making progress. Now, there's I could say, I want an Oscar, but broach it down. What does that mean? What do I have to do? Now, granted, in our business, somebody could be walking down the street and go, oh, Pat Patterson, you're the actress we won, and suddenly I'm, you know, up for an Oscar. But let's assume that's not going to happen. Let's assume that we got to work with the plan. And so you got to know what you're going after. So for me, when I came back from L.A., November 2013, I said, you know what? There's a lot of TV in New York. My goal was I want to be on 4 guest star roles on a TV program within the next year. And so what do I have to do? Break it down. Well, the casting director doesn't know who the heck Pat Patterson is. So I got to get in front of them. And then I've got to get them to like me, and I got to keep top of mind awareness. That's where social media comes in. You know, actors, postcards, one sheets, all these little things that I use to, you know, like a week from Monday, I'm filming in the Bronx, and I'm playing Michael Madsen's wife, the guy from Reservoir Dogs, Kill Bill. You know, he's a Tarantino guy. I'm playing his wife. Well, don't you think I told everybody that I've gotten in front of every casting director? Because I got to keep top of mind to win. If you know that, when you think of where do you want to eat, it's like probably the last 3 places you ate. That's what's going to come to mind. So I need to be one of those people they see. So I break it down that I want to do 4 TV shows. And so I thought, what TV shows do I fit in? You know, I'm not an office kind of person. I don't trans. I'm funny. I did Younger, a cute comedic piece on Younger, the new Darren Star TV show that's on TV Land that aired, I think, March 31st. I'm funny, but I'm not that kind of quirky funny. I'm much more. So I broke it down. Okay, so I got to get in front of Kate Geller, Christie Street Casting, this person and this person and this person. And I got to get in front of them more than once because they're not going to remember me. Human mind says 7 times, right? So let me get in front of them twice in a year and then keep myself available to them. The only thing is, it's relationship building.
Mm-hmm.
It's relationship. Yeah. And so for social media, I get up in the morning and I, you know, Hootsuite. I program my social media so that even when I'm on set, it's going out. And
right.
Sometimes it's just, it's not.
You got to be relevant. You got to let people know what you're doing. You got to be out there. You got to make yourself be a hot buzz. You got to buzz around, buzz like a bee.
Yeah.
Now, you also, you've appeared, obviously, in a number of film projects, such as My Bakery in Brooklyn with Linda Lavin, who I'm absolutely loving on The Good Wife. And you were on a film called A Cry from Within, opposite one of my favorite actresses, Kathy Moriarty. Love that woman.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I just can't. Oh, my gosh. She seems so fun. She seems like a tell it like it is kind of girl.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I play her mother in the movie, and we're like 3 years apart. So it was 2 hours of makeup for me every day. I play an 80-year-old woman, and Kathy's my daughter. And it's a psychological thriller, and I'm vicious. Oh, my gosh. I don't even know. I'm like, I saw the movie. It opened like last month, and I was like, but Kathy Moriarty, I'll tell you, she, what a giving woman. I mean, she, you know, she's a street girl from Jersey that now lives in Long Island. I mean, she don't mess with her. But she had been called in by ABC for a pilot called, Stay Calm and, I can't remember that statement, but it was a TV show. She was called in. And she came back to set. We were filming on Long Island, The Cry from Within. It was called Sebastian. And she goes, you know what? You are better. You are better the type. I'm a little more upscale than Kathy is. Looking, you're the type they really need. And she got me an audition with ABC for something she had been called in for.
That's so sweet. That is really
I mean, that's the kind of woman she is. Yeah,
well,
that's class.
Let me ask you, do you like being an actress or a producer more?
Ooh, I cannot not be an actress.
Yeah.
If I just produce something, I can have one line in it. I'll be satisfied.
Right.
But if I just produce it, there's a part of me that's going, right now I'm in the beginning, middle, I don't know, not at the end. We're not filming, so we're definitely not at the end of a project called Play Ball. It's a faith-based film. I was out in L.A. for the first week of April working with Ted Barrett Movie Guide Entertainment. You know, they do all the uplifting films, working with him with the script and everything. And I'm loving every part of it because you're putting together this creative team. And you, your mark as a producer is everywhere. You know, I'm not a control freak by any means, but I feel I have good taste and I have a passion for this. Because the three things I am is I'm an independent producer, I'm a woman of a certain age, a baby boomer, and I'm a woman of faith. And here I am able to work those three things together, and so that's to me is exciting. And you know, it helps what I said earlier with those curves, you know, those ups and downs that we actors have to go through. Like I haven't had a commercial audition, and I think my grandson wasn't even born the last time, and he's 10 months old, you know, type of thing. But so there are these curves. But if you're working on a project, if you're working on a project,
I'm sorry, Pat. I'm coming in and out. You know how when you do it over the telephone, it just keeps cutting in. And I apologize about that, but I never know when you stop talking or I start talking.
Sorry.
I apologize. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm so glad because I wanted to ask your expert opinion about this. What is the hardest thing? I get these emails from actresses that are over 40 all the time, and that I want to ask you, what is the hardest thing in your opinion about being an actress over 40 in this town, not New York, in LA?
No. In LA, it's totally different than in New York. Wow.
How different? What are the differences?
Okay. In LA, youth reigns in LA. It just does. It's, you know, younger the better. So, if you're a woman of a certain age, if you're, you know, over 40, and you are not powerful or give the perception of power, they just look past you. They just don't even see you. I mean, it's the worst thing any of us would ever have. We're not relevant. And looks reign in L.A., much more so than in New York. You know, I mean, I always walk out my door ready for the day. But in L.A., I was ready for the day on set. You know, I was put together. I was a complete package. It was not a hair out of place. Now, I come across as powerful, so I had that to my advantage, you know. But that, I think that's it. It's that nobody sees you. There was a great line in the, Devious Maids, in the pilot episodes where I don't remember which character, but she was saying, nobody sees me. I walk down the street and the men don't pay attention to me anymore. You know, my boyfriend said I look 40, and her son says, well, that's good because you're 50, and she, like, screams everything. In New York, it's a little more gritty, a little more real, if you will. Not to say the people are more real or less real. We just look different.
Right.
You know,
right.
You're running around in the subway. You're running around with weather.
Mm-hmm. You can be wearing mink and be wearing tennis shoes because you can't walk in New York in heels unless you're psychotic. I know there are definitely differences, and I always recommend to the audience live in both cities and experience both. So, you know, that'll give you the real experience. Now, what kind of things does Pathé Productions produce? Generally speaking, and do you accept submissions? And if so, how can people submit their projects for consideration?
The project I'm working on now came through a submission. You know, he just went to my website, and there, you know, just you can do PAC at PathéProductions.com, or if you go to the website, PathéProductions.com, there's a link to contact us, to send us, you know, treatments. And see if we're interested. Right now, you know, we have a play that we want to do. It's been done as a play, American Spare, and we're also going to do a play again. And at the same time, possibly, we're looking at the model to film it. The interiors, you know, like 3 days a week doing the play, 3 days a week filming the interiors, then closing the whole thing down and taking it for the exteriors kind of thing. So theater is still my love, but independent film, although I may package play ball to take to the studios. That's what Ted Bear wants me to do. So I also have like this wonderful thriller that came to me because I did a thriller when I was living out in LA, and I love these kids. I think they must be 26 now, these twin brothers that write these amazing thrillers that can be made for nothing. And you know that horror story and thrillers are like the top Netflix, VOD, Amazon things. And I'm not adverse to doing that. You know, I'm not adverse at all to doing that. So, yeah, I take submissions. I read them. You know, I vet them. I do have my daughter who lives with me who is a writer. You know, she did go on to be a writer. So I will throw things. If I like something, I'll throw it at her to get her opinion because she's, you know, 25. And it's a different perspective.
Yeah.
So that's it. Absolutely.
So you accept all submissions. So if you want to submit to Miss Pat at Pathé Productions, what website should they go to, Pat?
PathéProductions.com.
.com, okay.
P-A-T-E, yeah, .com, yeah.
Now, after, in 2011, you produced the short film entitled A Younger Man, right?
Right, that's the one my daughter wrote. Right.
That's the one your daughter wrote. Now, from your perspective as an older person, you're working with your daughter. A lot of people work with their family members. A lot of people can't do it. It seems like yours was very successful. Give us some tips on the best way to make a project work if you're working with a family member. It's like there are pros and cons. How do you make it work, Pat? Tell us. I mean, you could end up enemies and ostracized from the family. You could even get killed working with a family member if it doesn't work out right. Tell us, what are the secrets?
I'll fast forward. She actually was our first team PA when we did the feature, and she was brilliant. And it was because my husband's name is different. She has a different last name, and it took people about 2 weeks into the project to realize I was her mom.
Well, that's good. At least you guys weren't scratching each other's eyes out.
Oh, God. No. Because it's like any creative team. Yeah, there are tensions because you're working long hours and you're really tired and, you know, there's money concerns and it's other people's money kind of thing. But this was, you know, she was a writer, and it's funny. There was no problem on set. There was none. She, you know, she watched, she learned, she gave some comments. But when we did the first edit, the director had not really captured the aha moment of it, which is the reveal that it's suicide and that she's doing it to be with a younger man. the way he had directed it, you knew right away that the younger man was not some hot guy that she had met, but was her husband in a memory, which kills the reveal. And we did the cut, and I felt that, and she looked at it, and she said, that's not the story I wrote. I mean, it's yours to do with as you see fit, but that's not what I wrote. And I said, you're absolutely right. So we had to go back and reshoot some scenes to get it. So working with her there was great. And on set, you know, she's very aware of me. She's a lot like me. She like always knows where I am, and she knows what my feelings are. So that's a problem, because if I'm having a bad day, she'll have a bad day beginning of it. Yeah. Like,
So what would you, what one piece of advice would you give our audience if they're forced because they don't have any damn money and they have to work with their mother to get their shit produced? What would you recommend would be the best way to handle the delicate relationship between a mother and a daughter?
Everybody knows their expectations. Just, you know, communication. Any relationship is communication. You know, your 28-year-old lover is communication. Just let him know where he stands and things. But in terms of this, it's communicating what I expect of you and what you expect of me, and keeping that open, and not just saying never mind, you know, and walking off. I guess it's like a good marriage. You know, don't go to bed angry. A good marriage. Don't just fluff it off. Deal with it quickly, quietly. You know, I'm not a particularly high low emotion person. I mean, I get exhausted and like but you know, I'm not a yeller. So it's communication. It's just like, man, just let you know that shit. Stop doing it. Excuse my language. Stop it. Let's figure out a way to do it better. Or you're really irritating me. You're not my daughter here. You're my, you know, first team PA. Move on.
Type of thing. Now, after that project, you produced the feature film Junction, which starred Michael O'Keefe and Anthony Rapp, and it won a ton of awards. Now, what is the film about, just briefly, and what was your most rewarding memory?
It's about four meth addicts that break into a home to steal a colored TV for drug money, and then discover the homeowner, who is Anthony Rapp, might be worse than they are, and it turns into a hostage situation, and it just turns on its ear. And it also has a big ha-ha moment at the end, too. My most rewarding thing was that when we were wrapped, that a 40-man crew, I would work with every single one of them again, and have.
Wow.
Because the synergy was so, you know, I've been on enough play. When actors come together, we create a family. Now, it could be a dysfunctional family, but it's a family.
Yeah.
This was good, solid family. And we were all working on a modified low budget, which is not all that much money, you know, towards this goal with 21-day shoot. We made our days. Some of them were 20 hours long, but we made our days, you know. And it was that just collective. And it, they weren't all like producers. They were for hire. They're people we brought in, you know, and like creative team that we put together, and it just learned. And I've worked with a lot of them.
You are so lucky. The last film I was producer on, oh my God, I would pull up and I would see these production assistants, they were eating all the craft services food, hiding under a tree, talking on their cell phone. I'm like, what are you doing over there? This one guy was literally taking food off of the craft services tape, stuffing it in his pants and his shirt pockets, and then tweeting and Facebooking. So you're very lucky that you had that. I had to pop a damn pill every day to keep myself calm. Now, what would you say challenged you the most about the project? Because, you know, we want to hear the negative stuff. We want to hear the reality. What challenged you the most?
Oh, my God, my ignorance. I mean, I had done theater. They're not the same animal. Because, you know, there were three producers. One of them was one of the stars. The other one was also the UPM. And then there was me. And I'm doing the money, and I'm doing the reports, and the SAG reports. And I'm, you know, and like I said, I'm working. I'm learning every day something new. And I'm dealing with all these people money, and we're going for the tax credit in New Jersey. So every penny has to be accounted for so that when they audit us, we can get the tax rebate or whatever, tax rebate. So it was the exhaustion of always, you know, that learning curve. Every day was a learning curve.
What advice or tips would you share with the audience about if there's one thing you learned that you would want to share to help somebody else?
I think the main thing I wish I had understood was the absolute necessity for a production accountant on any size film. Because somebody has to every day let us know how much money is out, how much is going, you know, and that takes a lot of time. And so for me, that would be to budget that into your budget.
It's fine. It doesn't have to be. Say it again. Yes. Hire who? Say it one more time.
A production accountant. Someone responsible every day for the money. Because
right.
That keeps you on track. And for me, I was spending hours doing it, which meant I wasn't, you know, we're a small team. You know, I mean, at sometimes I was washing the bathrooms. And other times I was making breakfast for 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's only so much you can do. And to me, it would be hire a production accountant. And obviously get people who, you know, you like to work with.
Yeah, and someone you can trust with the money, honey.
Yeah.
Now, Junction, we only have 10 minutes to go. I want to get this in there. Okay. Junction has been acquired by distributor Grand Entertainment Group. What mm-hmm. is the best way, Pat, to get a film distributor?
Well, I have to tell you, going forward, I mean, when we started with Junction, I'll tell you, the film festival circuit was the way. That was what you did. You made the film, you went to the festival circuit, the distributors were there, yay team. I swear, the minute we were locked, that broke down. It just broke down, you know. Now you go to you go to Sundance and it's Sony Pictures, you know. It's not Pathé Production Pictures. So that went away. So we had to go, now I am talking already, and I don't even have a locked script. I'm talking with distributors using social media. You know, I'm talking with social media to use social media to get distributors. This one company I talked to said they had a client come had the film in the can, but didn't have a distributor, and they were using I don't know how LinkedIn to try to get to distributors. Now we got it because we started winning awards. And so, you know, IMDb, you start to get press, you know, IndieWire, and so we became a hot commodity. And we suddenly had distributors coming after us. Now, we're still not on video on demand. That will be July 14th. We will be on VOD. We're on Redbox, we're on Amazon, we're on DVD. We've had our small theatrical release. But we will be on VOD, which is really where our kind of, you know, genre thriller movie does well, July 14th of this year.
That's, you know, after this successful Mid-City Theatrical Junction was released, mm-hmm. I thought it was released on DVD and VOD and Redbox.
You can also
order it on Twitter, and it's going to be on Netflix, right?
Right.
Is that
right?
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So for those filmmakers who don't have a clue how to make this happen for their film and what their involvement would be, can you explain this process? I mean, how do you keep track of all these activities, and why should you, from a business perspective? Tell us how the hell. It's a dream for anybody to have their film on DVD, VOD, Redbox, Amazon, Netflix. How the heck do you do it?
Absolutely. Well, by making a really good film for, you know, not a huge amount of money. So it wasn't like, oh my God, you know, got to pay him $20 million for this kind of thing. And it's the organizational thing. Who would want my film? You know, is it a Lionsgate film? Is it a TriStar film? Is it a smaller distributor? What kind of films do they take? And start to create those relationships. Reach out to them. Send them the trailers. Send them your press packets. Send them your clippings, you know, if that's what it's still called. You know, your press release. Follow them on Twitter. You know, make a relationship so they're interested in taking your quote-unquote call. So we had a list. I mean, my producing partner, Summer Crockett-Moore, is a brilliant woman, a brilliant businesswoman, and we kept lists of people that we were, you know, sort of stalking, if you will. And then we started, you know, every time you win an award, it's like an actor. Every time I do another project, I let everybody know. So know who you're going. Again, it's the goal thing. Who am I going? What are my goals? My goal is to get a distributor. How do I do that? Well, they got to know I exist. Who would be interested in me? Well, let me make my list. Let me get my information. Let me ask other filmmakers. Let me look at film festivals. Let me go online to websites. Create that list and then work that list. And get
again, you got to be good. You got to handle your business. This is not an acting a portion.
No.
This is the business,
yes.
And you got to keep on top of it. Every single thing that you're doing, while we're going to, I mean, when you get to the point where the film distributor picks your film up, that's the one, for those who don't know, that's the one who is in charge of getting it on DVD, VOD, Redbox, Amazon, and Netflix. They usually handle that. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah. Here's the one thing I will say, is that really quickly, even after they take it, I have learned you need to stay involved.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You got to keep on top of it. It's like, show me the money, in the words of Cuba Gooding Jr. Show me the money. If they got it all out there, who the hell's keeping track of it? Where are you getting your pennies? Where are my pennies coming from? Uh-huh. Where are my, you know, there's got to be somebody tracking the money. And you got enough things to do. Who does Pat Patterson have keeping track of that? Because, you know, they're supposed to send you, you know, the sheets and this is the quarter. But, you know, are you going to trust them or are you going to have somebody keep track of it?
Thank God. The other thing when you have enough money, is an entertainment attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that they tend to be, you know, expensive, but they're worth their money going forward.
They are.
Because they deal with the distribution deals.
They do it every day, and they keep on top. Well, hopefully, if they don't have a damn golf club in their hand and a martini, they'll keep on track of it. Let's just keep our fingers crossed on that, because most of them are half drunk. Okay, so Junction is represented by ITN Distribution for foreign sales. What are your, Pat Patterson, responsibilities as a producer in dealing with a foreign sales aspect? Again, what do you need to do as a producer to make this happen? I know that you get it. Say, I think that Grand Entertainment is a domestic distributor, but is it their job to find foreign distributors, or do you have to keep up on it?
No, I mean, that would be impossible, I think. You know, it would be ideal. But, you know, I track our websites. That's another thing I do, you know, the Pat Tech Productions and my own personal Pat Patterson website and the Junction website. So I know if we're getting hits in Brazil or we're getting hits in, you know, so I sort of have an idea where they are and where they're pushing. And then I sort of track that to the reports they give us. You know, and there's a lot, as you know, maybe your listeners don't. I mean, when you go into a foreign country, well, the name of Junction in foreign sales is hostage, because Junction doesn't translate in a lot of languages.
Right.
So it's called hostage there.
Oh.
Okay. And then you have all the dubbing and the stems and, you know, all these things that have to be done, deliverables, as it were, that cost money. And so you have to decide, is it worth it if my market in Spain is only going to give me $25,000 to put $20,000 into it? You know, so there are decisions that keep getting made all along the way.
And people, Pat, real quick, people don't realize this. I'm amazed when I talk to people at parties, they have no idea. They're like, oh my God, new filmmakers. Oh, if I could get a distributor. Oh, if they can pick my film. What they don't realize is that, yay, a distributor's going to pick your film, but hello, you're the one that's going to be paying for them to do what they need to do.
Yep.
You better have $10,000, $15,000 or more.
Yep.
People don't realize
$3,000.
Yeah. They think that the distributing company is going to do all this. Can you explain that, Pat? Tell them.
Well, we're going back to it's a business. It's their business. Why, they're not my partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not my. Mm-hmm. Why should they put $30,000 in marketing out for me?
Yep.
Well, that's my. You know, they're marketing my product. It's my widget. It's my pantyhose, whatever it is. No other business would we expect, except for naive, you know, filmmakers, artists, that somebody else should be paying for our work. That
right.
we've, you know, if I want my work, if I want to produce a play, I got to pay for the theater. They're not going to give it to me. each step of the way. And, you know, I get a 24-year, great. A 24-year-old filmmaker will send me a script and say, you know, I want you to help me with this. And I'm like, so, okay. And I'm not being crass. What's in it for me and how are we going to get it distributed? Exactly. Well, you know, maybe we'll get it into Sundance. I'm like, no. No. Who are your stars? Who am I going to book on? Who am I going to bank on? You know, how can I? So in terms of foreign sales or anything, you have to have money budgeted. You got to do your homework. Mm-hmm. It's not just making the negative cost and making the film. It's all the other costs.
Exactly. So,
and it's
people,
all personal cost.
Yeah. Please, people, keep in mind, it's not just getting a distributor. You're going to pay for those people mm-hmm. to do their job. So factor in when you're on your crowdfunding campaign, however you're getting money, you got to factor in the money if you do get picked up by a film distributor. So keep that in mind. Now, Pat, you have a number of upcoming projects. You got Play Ball, Encino SCI, Finding the Sweet Spot. Give us the scoops on these. We got like 1 minute. Let's do it.
Encino. Encino is the one when I'm out there in L.A. because we're going to do it in Encino, and it's a parody of the SCI, the crime scene investigation. It is bloody hysterical by Mike Benjavenga, and it's 7 10-minute episodes, and we're going to be doing it out there this summer. It's just laugh out loud. You know, it'll be a web series, and we'll do our homework before. Again, web series, do your homework, because you're going to make it. You got to make sure people come and watch it.
Oh, my God, girl. I am going to beg you and come bearing alcohol and cocktails and food
there you go,
to
girl.
Let me work on that play for free. I mean, work on that for free, because I am a CSI fanatic, and I live close to the valley. So I am going to beg
you.
You want some free help? I am there. You better make sure you call me for
that. Don't think we won't.
I do everything. I can do anything. And you talk about organization. Honey child, my closets are organized by season, color. My house is color coordinated. Let me tell you, we will work definitely well together. So make sure you have Steve give me a call. Now, what's Play Ball? Is that an independent film?
Play Ball is the faith-based film that I'm in negotiations out in L.A. with. And we're pretty close to a lock script, which just means when I set it out to Ted Baer to read, it'll be like 9 more rewrites, but that's okay. And it's a faith-based film, uplifting film about a minister dealing with Alzheimer's and how does he service God as he is losing his, you know, capacities. And God sort of throws him a curveball by the name of Joey, this little 7-year-old boy. So basically the tagline would be, there's no need to fear the ball if you have faith in the pitcher, and the pitcher is God.
Alzheimer's, such a subject. I was just producer on a film called Our Father, starring Michael Gross. Remember Michael Gross from Family
mm-hmm.
Ties?
Mm-hmm.
And the talented Eileen Gruba. And we have swept at the film festivals, and we just got accepted at Cannes.
Fabulous.
So exciting. My first project that I've been a part of that is going to Cannes. So even though I'm an award winning little producer for, you know, web series, short films. I don't do feature. I can't handle features. Oh God. They work my nerves. I like to stick to, I only produce shorts, web series, music videos. That's it. No features for me. Finding the Sweet Spot. What is it? Where can we find it?
Finding the Sweet Spot is I'm a consulting producer on it. This woman that she's funny. We've been in like numerous commercials together and have become friends and actually we were both on hold for the same commercial. Neither of us got it recently. But anyway, she had this story that she came out to L.A. and lived with me and, you know, went and learned the business a little bit. And so I've been helping her with her business plan, you know, and just how to market it, how to get distribution before you start principal photography. Or how to at least set it up so that, you know, you've got some cards stacked on your side. And it's her personal story. She's a woman from Dominican Republic, and it's just her personal journey, you know, and it's interesting, and it's a good uplifting story also. So I've just been helping her out with that. You know, I don't know that I'll produce it per se, but you got to get back. Yes. You know, you got to get back in our industry. People think we're cutthroat, and I have found it to be the exact opposite. People like you with your energy and your love. That's what I have found in our industry.
I find talking about money personally distasteful. I don't like to talk about it. If I find something exciting, I say, that's it. I want to work on it. I don't want any money. Just give me a damn credit on IMDb because, you know, I make my money flipping houses. I own a website design company. I make money. I don't need money. I just want to work on something fun. Fun. That's what it is for me. Some people, it is about money, but, you know, it sounds like you work on things for the love and the passion.
Oh, yeah.
You're a very exciting woman. Very exciting. Very. If I were if I were a man, I might have to take you as a lover because you're titillating. You're certainly titillating. Well, that's all we have time for. You just finished shooting. A faith-based film called Rashi in Louisiana. We didn't get to talk about that. Pat, promise me you're coming back on the show.
Yes, girl. Yes, absolutely.
Well, hey, you know what? When you come here to shoot your film, Encino SCI, come into the studio and let's do the interview right at the radio station.
Fabulous. All right.
We'll promote all your stuff. And I'll bring a bottle of Wild Turkey and we'll cocktail it up.
Excellent.
All right.
Excellent. I'll bring the glasses and the ice. Thank you so much.
I adore you. When Stephen Levine said that you were my cup of tea, he was not kidding. You are the whole Boston Tea Party for me, girl.
Thank you, sweet.
Well, say goodbye to your fans, Pat Patterson.
Goodbye, y'all out there in LA and those of my friends in New York that listen. God bless.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We're going to have Pat Patterson back. Check her out. And thank you for tuning in. And we'll see you next week. Say goodbye, Pat.
Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.